This is Purple Radio on demand.
When I first stepped foot in the town of Pusok, I thought, what a sorry sight. The Wild West. Where our pot.
Yes, we swore already!
Where we did our long podcast. Forever.
I'm keeping this one under an hour. Hello, and welcome back to Who's Up Podcasts. I'm here joined today by Lottie. Cormac.
Well, howdy there.
And our lovely American guest, Louis.
Howdy.
And also, you may hear Bertie giggling in the corner, but they're not podcasting.
There's no need to out me like that.
There are only four chairs in the studio.
Anyway.
And five people.
This is...
Birdie's
flunky. This room ain't big enough for the five of us.
This town ain't big enough for all five of us.
You just bought a kazoo to a gunfight.
Gunfight? Like the gunfighters? Like the gunfight? The OK Corral?
Anyway. We're podcasting on Identity Theft Week, which is the Gunfighters and Flatline.
Yay!
before anything else, we've got a little cheeky little spoiler warning for you all.
Oh,
very
gosh,
exciting, I know.
That's so cheeky.
I know, it's very, very cheeky.
What could we be spoiling about the Gunfighters, though?
There's some guns and they fight. Ollie, you ruined it!
I haven't seen the episode, Ollie.
Honestly, what?
Wow.
Well, lol.
Oh, there's also singing. There's lots of singing.
There's
yes,
it's
spoilers for especially those episodes, but let's be honest, all of the Whoniverse.
Will this be the first musical episode of Who's Up Podcast?
Probably not.
Do you mean we can sing?
We can dance.
Day man.
Archer of the night man. Champion of the sun.
Right, so, the Gunfighters.
The first
Doctor, played by William Hartnell, joined by his lovely companions Stephen and Dodo, they land in the Wild West. The Doctor has a toothache.
This is the plot of the episode. The Doctor has a toothache.
But who gave him the toothache? That's the question.
The Candyman.
Cavity.
It should have been, but no, it was the
It was
toy
poor
maker.
Dental
the
hygiene.
The toy maker, that character from The Giggle. Was it foreshadowing?
The very same.
Oh, no. So the Doctor's got a toothache. His tooth is in fact aching. That's the definition of a toothache. There you go, in case you didn't know.
Listeners. Welcome to Who Sock Defines. On this week's episode, toothache.
So what happens in this story, Ollie? Please, do tell.
So, the Doctor... goes to the dentist.
What's his name? What's
going
the, what's
to the dentist,
dentist
now? the dentist's name is Doc Holliday. It's the famous outlaw called Doc Holliday, and it's some good comedy. I think this is a very boring serial, but the first part is quite funny because you've got some hilarious mistaken identity with someone goes to the dentist where Doc Holliday is and goes, oh, are you Doc? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm the doctor. And he goes, Holliday? And then it's like, yeah, it's a sort of holiday, isn't it?
I do have a comment about that, though, but we'll get back to that. It's fine.
You can get to it now?
Oh, okay. Basically, just a couple serials earlier, you had the Time Meddler where multiple times the doctor tells Stephen to not call him Doc. And then here, he's immediately like, Doc, oh yeah, sure, that's me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe he's more comfortable asking not to be referred by something by, like, to someone he cares about.
Maybe he just hates Stephen.
Well, he was Doc blocking him.
Never speak again.
Anyway, I must say, it's a questionable decision, I think, to go... To go to the Wild West for a toothache when you've got a time machine. But to be fair, they do have a time machine that they can't really fly at this point. So it's sort of a lottery where they end up.
There's no guarantee that wherever they click the button and go,
that there would be someone better to help them.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're doing.
I mean, let's be honest, in most, and we don't know about the future, but in most time periods in the past, they're going to have worse dental hygiene than a West Wild West town, or they could end up on a random planet, or like a desolate, like they could be anything.
Or the planet of the teeth.
Or like Scar or something, where it would just be made objectively worse. Like, oh, you've got toothache? Yeah. Well, guess what? Die.
Oh, I thought like, meaning like, well, Daleks don't have teeth.
Daleks don't have noses.
I feel like Daleks would be better.
I mean, we know that they used to wear Carlet form.
Mm. Yeah, but Daleks don't have teeth. Also, like, look at them.
I
love a good Cast of Fatal Death reference.
Me too.
Underrated classic.
And anyway. I must say, I find it funny, like, seeing 60s episodes are hilarious with how different the canon is to now. Because, like, nowadays, you know, like, in an episode we're podcasting on next week, The Almost People, spoilers for The Almost People, the Doctor has a thing in the TARDIS which will just cure a deadly blood clot. But then in this episode, he has nothing in the TARDIS for a toothache.
Honestly, I feel like they still don't have anything in the TARDIS for a toothache, let's be honest.
Yeah, it was just randomly, they've got blood clot medicine, but nothing else.
Welcome to Doctor Who, where plot convenience plays no part in the story.
Hmm. Like, can you imagine Shooter just going, ah, oh, give me a minute, babes, I've got tooth. Like, what?
You know what I've got? I've got Mavity Glow.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah.
If you just alter the Mavity, then the tooth comes right out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
But then you risk all the teeth coming out.
But there's one thing which is quite prominent in this episode, and that it's got a little musical number which is playing
at various points. Yes, it's probably the first musical ever in Doctor Who.
And the last, so far.
The last that's that extensive, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm not counting, you know, Rah Rah Rasputin.
I was going to wait until... Sorry.
We're not going to count the originally composed Goblin song specifically for the episode The Church on Ruby Road, or other Marigold songs that
Bertie
also exist.
Bertie was sort of waving in the corner just like, the Christmas special.
I mean, I feel like one song doesn't make it a musical episode.
I mean, this is technically one song.
Yeah, but it's one song played at various points throughout the episode.
It's just one really long song with 20 verses.
I think you said it was like 16 minutes, didn't you?
I looked up the full version is like a good 10 minutes, which is still
a bit longer.
I also love
tiny bit longer than 10 minutes.
I love that Stephen and Dodo also actually play the song in the bar, which is fun.
But the thing is, that's episode one, and as you said, episode one is probably the best because
episode one has some genuinely good comedy.
Yeah, it's, let's hope the piano knows it. That sort of thing.
Yeah, but yeah, it goes like it really feels like they had a good idea for one part, and then they realised that for some reason it had to be four parts, and just stretched the plot out into boring convolution.
The main plot point of this story is the gunfight at the OK Corral, the big fight between the Clantons and the Erbs. It took a minute. The gunfight is a minute long in real life, but they've got to stretch out and stretch out, and Dodo leaves, then Stephen leaves, and there's like backwards and forwards, and it's a big build-up of, oh my god, the Doctor is going to fight the OK... Oh no, he's not. Right, all right, well, why are we caring? And it's not even true as well. There were certain mistakes of who died and people there.
Several fictional characters, people don't show up.
Johnny
Ringo's dead. Why is Johnny Ringo dead? Anyway.
I'm Johnny Ringo.
You can't rewrite history, not one line. Except when you can.
I'm Johnny Ringo, not associated with the Beatles.
When I first watched it, I knew the reputation was...
I'd like to be under the sea.
You'll be under the sea if you start interrupting me, laddie. Sorry, my identity was stolen.
If anyone's listening and I don't turn up to Hoosock in a couple of weeks...
Louise done away with
you. Yeah, maybe just sort of...
Don't leave me.
It wouldn't really be my choice.
It wasn't me. My identity was stolen, Lossie. Because it's Identity Theft Week. When I first watched it, I knew it was bad. So my expectations were very, very low. But I quite enjoyed it. However, on repeated rewatch, and as I say repeated, it's not good. It's really terrible. It's what killed the pure historical.
Yeah.
Because they were like, this is...
The first part, I think, was better than I expected, and the rest was about what I expected based on what I've heard about it.
I don't like to say things are absolutely terrible, because it's not absolutely terrible, because we can compliment the first, like,
the first episode part.
Yeah.
Can compliment the first part, but the stretching it out really sort of killed it, I think.
I quite enjoyed it, but I think that may well be in the Louis way, shall we say.
Yeah. I also think... I enjoy the comedy with the Doctor being in jail and Stephen giving him a gun to break out, and then the Doctor just gives the gun to the person holding him prisoner.
Just
like,
Stephen, tell
my friend, I'm quite happy here.
Can people stop giving me guns, please? Also,
it's so
the fact
funny.
That, like, right at the beginning of the episode, he's like, yes, that gun is part of my prize collection, and then, that guns.
I also love that he refuses to drink alcohol, which is, you know, good influence on children. And instead he wants a glass of milk, which is that's so funny to me.
Thing is, discussed, it's probably unpasteurized milk. Sure.
Yes. So
for the doctor,
for the listeners,
unpasteurized milk. That's what killed him off.
My
body of mine is wearing with fin. Time for some milk.
They're lactose intolerant.
Oh dear. But yeah, we were having a discussion in the episode about what kind of milk the different doctors would drink. I'm sure that Ten would drink whole milk, but Bertie insisted it would be semi-skimmed.
It's semi-skimmed milk.
I feel like they would alternate.
No, it's semi-skimmed.
Yeah.
Whatever's cheaper, like,
I do very much
shop.
Solidly agree that 14 would drink oat milk.
Oh yeah, 14 would drink oat milk.
I feel like 7 would also possibly drink some, like, milk alternative. Mm. I don't
know
why.
I can see that.
Just give me those vibes.
4 would drink strawberry milk.
Yeah. I could see 3 drinking just pure blue.
Yeah.
I feel like 4 would have strawberry milk in the sense of, like, you know those straws
with the jelly babies.
You know those straws that... I love jelly babies, but I just can't imagine jelly baby flavoured milk. But you know those
they're just with his jelly babies.
Oh, yeah.
You'd have some jelly babies and you'd have some strawberry milk.
Okay, yeah.
Romana, I'm tired. Pass me my strawberry milk.
Romana, I would like my milk. I want my strawberry milk.
Can we have this in After the Shadows, a doctor who likes strawberry milk?
Romana.
Who would have cocoa milk?
That's a good question.
There was a doctor I said would have coconut milk.
No, war doctor would have no milk whatsoever.
No, the war doctor would have powdered milk.
No, I'm saying, like, black tea, black coffee, dry cereal, no milk whatsoever. That's the war doctor.
Which doctor would only use the UHT milk you'd find in hotel rooms?
1, I think.
Maybe 2.
9 specifically because he's stolen them all.
Yes, I can see either 2 or 9. 2 or 9, yeah.
Oh yeah, 2 would,
Which
yeah.
doctor would purely have condensed milk?
Probably 5.
Oh.
I mean...
Yeah, yeah.
Paper, Tegan, I'll drink your milk.
I could see 12 having chocolate milk.
Brave Tegan, now drink the milk.
Oh no, we said 13 would have chocolate milk.
Yes, but also I think we've also discovered would also have squash with milk.
who would have Malk from The Simpsons?
Now I've never heard of Malk.
8 because he spends a lot of time in comics. I don't know.
Yeah. So he doesn't really have the proper, like, he doesn't have a proper series. He doesn't get the
proper
milk.
What's Malk?
It was a joke in The Simpsons where the school budget was getting so thin that they were serving Malk instead of milk.
Oh.
And what's Malk?
Well, I don't know.
It's the special ingredient.
Off-brand
anyway.
Milk. Even the
but yeah,
milk
I was going to say that, what, Louis?
I don't know.
You're just pointing at me.
I always, yeah.
What's the point?
Point taken.
Point what?
Point taken? Oh,
oh no.
Oh no,
point taken.
Why are we making point puns?
I don't know.
This is not the Gunfighters from 1960-something.
I don't think there's any point in this.
The gunfight at the Purple Radio Corral.
True. I do like the kind of double joke of episode one's name of being... a holiday for the doctor, because it's funny because it's like, Doc Holiday, a holiday
yes.
for the doctor, and it plays into the whole joke of the name.
I really
funny.
Feel that the only reason
like
why this story was made was someone looked in a book of the Wild West and saw the word Doc Holiday and thought, hang on, we've got a show called Doctor Who. Mistaken identity.
Also, two other things. First of all, the little mini fourth wall break of like the I'm Doctor
Calazaro or something like that.
Yeah, like that.
Calamari.
Doctor Who? Yeah,
which I think in the Moffat era that's done so much, and it's quite funny seeing it this early on in the show.
Oh, they do the all the time. Joke. I mean, spoilers alert for the War Machine, so it comes up quite a lot.
Oh, nice.
In the Highlanders, he refers to himself as Dr. Von Ver, which means Doctor Who.
Oh, right.
It's funny.
Also, the credits say Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. Like, and they still do until the way, like, until like, 9, I think, isn't it?
Well, I think in classic...
I think different ones.
I think in classic Who, they start with Doctor Who and then go to the Doctor, but then 9 is Doctor Who again.
I'm pretty sure 9, yeah.
9 is Doctor Who.
And then suddenly they're like, oh, yeah, we'll put it back to the Doctor.
Do you think at some point they'll go back to Doctor Who?
Oh, yeah.
They probably will at some point, for old time's sake.
In my research, I found out that actually that first episode is the only classic story where it refers, where the title refers to the Doctor as the Doctor. So you've got Holiday for the Doctor, but then there are other stories that very much don't. Like, you have Doctor Who and the Silurians.
Yeah.
And you have The Death of Doctor Who, which I think is from The Chase. And that's interesting.
I really wish that you didn't say The Chase, because now I've only got that theme stuck in my head.
No, not that Chase.
It's time to meet the Chasers.
No! But also, the other thing that I really liked about the episode, weirdly, is how non-Doctor Who it felt. Which sounds strange, but it's the fact that there were several scenes in it that you could look at it and go, yeah, it's just a regular Western. Like, it's just a spaghetti Western.
That's the annoying thing, because I feel that this is just trying to do the parody of a Western, but do it on a BBC budget with clearly people not doing the best accent.
But they did it well, other than the accent.
I think the sets are fine, and I think the costumes are fine.
It's a parody of a Western where someone has been, like, told, or someone has asked someone else to describe what a Western is.
Yeah, the history of the Wild West is both fascinating and horrific, and it would be interesting to see Doctor Who do it, but I think they've got to do it very carefully, because there are many things that, you know, I'm not even sure it will be addressed properly. For instance, the alcoholism, the effects of the California Gold Rush, cannibalism. The Donner Party was a famous party that got lost in the mountains and went to cannibalism. Would the Doctor Who do that? Probably not.
I don't think
probably
they would.
Not, no.
It won't
not
be the countryside. It'll be the mountains.
You know, Stephen, Dodo, I think we should leave before we become...
You know, Stephen and Dodo. I thought we could go on the trail to Oregon.
I think...
But maybe, I know this shortcut.
I think if we stay here a little too long, my toothache will not be our only issue. Alternatively, we'll have no more issues ever. But
started with a mild curiosity in the junkyard. And now it's turned into quite a great hungry adventure.
We kill Dodo. Dodo's the weakest.
Dead as a dodo.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not proud of him, but I'm not the greatest here today.
So is this the second time, like, Husok has sort of referred to cannibalism?
Oh dear.
Emotions, something. Love, pride, hunger.
Cannibalism.
I'm hungry.
The hungry earth.
Hungry.
We don't. This is. We don't need a tie-in with Flesh Week. Please stop.
Oh no. Oh dear. We definitely named that questionably, and I will take full responsibility for that one.
No, I mean it's accurate. It's the flesh, the rebel flesh, but like.
All flesh is grass.
And no, I want some grass.
I'm gonna have to edit that myself swearing now.
No, you've got to edit the episode.
I mean, Louis, you already swore earlier.
Yeah, so that's two counts.
I can't believe I've.
And it's by the exec as well. Bertie, quick, you swear, and then we have another thing to edit.
Don't swear, Bertie. Please.
Answer that. I can't leave all questions till the end, Bertie.
It's been over 2 years of me Husok podcasting, and I've never sworn, and I can't believe I've just done it.
It's been 84 years.
I mean, I swore on the last podcast I was in, and I felt awful.
Oh yeah, that did happen.
You should.
It was me and Wheat, to be fair.
Yeah. If there's any Wheat to swear on.
And this is identity theft, really, and I think you can blame the swearing on someone else.
Anyway, do we have anything else in particular to say about the gunfighters?
I like the way it ended with the hint at Doctor Who and Savages.
I thought you were meaning just like, I liked that it ended.
Oh, well, which that is well. Doctor Who and the Savages.
Which is,
they changed it.
It's, this is sort of the last time that every individual episode had a name, and for then on it would be the Savages part 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is an interesting sign, but Cormac has...
Sorry, I'm just giving... according to the TARDIS wiki, there is actually an exception, and that is that the first part of Invasion of the Dinosaurs was apparently labelled as Invasion.
Yes.
But that, which I find funny.
Invasion!
No.
Next one is of.
Because
next
they
one is the...
They didn't want to spoil it was
dinosaurs.
So technically that breaks the rule, but also... No, it doesn't.
Technically all New Who episodes, multi-parters, but other than the End of Time and Spyfall do that.
I mean, I'll tell you what, guys, I did not expect there to be dinosaurs on a spaceship in the episode Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Have you got any organic matter on you?
Is there a Doctor Who story which just lies in the title? I mean, not like The Lie of the Land, but that it just deliberately misleads you.
Oh.
Let's Kill Hitler.
No.
I mean, they don't kill Hitler.
Yeah.
They do intend to kill Hitler.
Death of the Doctor?
Invasion of the Bane.
No, but also the Death of Doctor Who.
The invasion had already happened. They were already there.
So,
invasion of what?
The Bane. No, that's Sarah Jane.
Okay, what else?
The Impossible Astronaut.
The End of Time didn't end.
The Impossible Astronaut.
The astronaut was entirely possible.
Yeah.
Journey's End. They didn't stop off at the services for the fire.
Yeah, the journey didn't end.
The journey did not end.
Stolen Earth, it was retrieved at some point. So.
Well, no, it was stolen.
Yeah.
And it wasn't stolen, it just moved to a different place. I mean, who did it belong to?
Yeah, because the human race... To be,
the Daleks do not steal, we borrow!
You could argue...
We are borrowers!
Humans own the Earth, and then the Daleks stole it off them by invading, but that's nothing to do with the Earth being moved, which is what the title actually refers to.
So it should have been called the Moving Earth.
The Moving Earth.
The Bells of St. John. There was no one called St. John, and they didn't own a bell. I know what it refers to. I'm sorry. I'm being literal.
Flat line. There were no flat lines.
Well, actually, if you look on the road...
Well, that's all right. Speaking of flat line,
well, that's all right.
Let's move on to
move
flat line.
Right along.
So,
can we do a Western monologue for flat line?
If you so desire.
When I stepped forward, I couldn't believe it. I haven't seen this episode in years. And I thought it was pretty good. It wasn't a Western, though.
I don't think we know all of this theme. Is this good, bad, or ugly? I can't tell.
All three at once.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch the ukulele version?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that was superb.
Of what?
Yeah.
What was
the good,
it like
the good, the bad, and the ugly.
What was it like a 2010 ukulele version of the
good,
the bad,
and the
ugly?
No, it was like the National Orchestra.
Oh, okay.
Not is like, here's the good, the bad, the ugly, recreated with ukuleles.
Is this the good, the bad, and the ugly sort of podcasts?
Yes.
Who's your podcast?
Yeah.
Who is the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Oh, am I in the wrong podcast?
Yes.
I don't think I want to call anyone in this podcast bad or ugly, to be honest.
We're the good. We're reviewing the bad and the ugly.
What, as in, you as in, what, Lothian Cormac?
Yeah, because Gunfighters isn't really great, so we'll call that the bad, and then Flatline has some interesting CGI, we'll call it the ugly.
It's
we've got the good
bad.
Reviewing the bad and the ugly.
Anyway,
I'm going to
talk about Flatline now. So... The Doctor lands in Bristol, which is not where Clara lives, and the TARDIS is small.
It is.
Yes. And I think.
So, what did we think of the episode?
I think it's a really fun concept. I like the TARDIS being small.
Bring back small TARDIS.
I must say, I find it quite funny how, when it's like medium sized, the door is like, at the bottom of from the inside, whereas when it's really small, the door is at the middle. Like, it makes sense from a practical point of view, but why?
This is called plot convenience.
Maybe the TARDIS was like, oh, sorry, I'll adjust the height.
Yeah, to be fair, maybe the TARDIS did just have control over the height and did what was most convenient.
I like how it screws around with both the dimensions of the TARDIS and, of course, dimensions as we know them. And the whole thing of 2D aliens and 2D villains wanting to achieve sentience and power in the third dimension is really, really interesting.
And I think it's a really clever concept. I think the 2D creatures are a really clever concept, but I think linking it to the TARDIS being dimensional is also very clever. And I think I believe it was done just because of filming constraints, but I do, like, it does work well, the sectioning Capaldi off and making Clara the sort of main character of the episode.
This is also not the first time dimensions have been played with the TARDIS.
You mean,
for example,
dimensions
Legopolis?
I was more making a comment on the Time Meddler.
Oh, yes.
Spoilers for the Time Meddler.
Now I'm still thinking of the Time Monster, where you've got the TARDISes trapped in each other.
Fun fact, Flesh Week was originally going to be... it was originally going to be... It's my week, and it was originally going to be... Changing History Week with the Time Meddler and Rosa, and then we realised that would mean we had 3 William Hartnell episodes in the term, and we thought that might be a little bit much for Who Thought Goers.
Yes, man, we can't have too much of me at once now, can you?
But he did say he'd come back.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
I shall come back.
Yes,
yes,
I shall come back. Until then,
there must be no tears, no regrets, no tears, no anxiety.
And no
more William Hartnell
episodes.
Just go forward in all your beliefs. And prove to me that I had best be left in the 60s.
Goodbye, Susan.
Goodbye, my dear.
I'll take your shoe.
Why does he take the shoe?
Give me your shoe.
Biggest unanswered questions in Doctor Who.
That's not the biggest issue. The issue is that Susan knew David for like a few days. It's really weird. I just don't understand.
This way, I was watching the Dark Invasion of Earth, and I very much sent a message to my friend being,
Nothing happened.
I sent a message to my friend being like a fake quote from the Doctor. It's just like, oh, Susan, you're not obeying my every single word. Well, best abandon you. Yes. Because, there's a moment. There's a moment in that serial where, Susan goes slightly against him, and, you can tell he gets mad.
Yeah. It's a questionable decision.
You're right there, Lloyd.
Anyway, talking about the Dalek invasion of Earth.
Back to Flatland.
when they sort of move on from that...
From the Dalek invasion of Earth, they start talking about Flatland.
And tell, Susan's story. It's still not interesting. Have you ever read Legacy of the Dalek?
I have not.
Don't. I don't really like it. It was interesting because it tried to sort of continue Susan's story. Basically says that, Susan is a Time Lord, so is not aging as quickly as everyone else. Ooh, what's going on there? And I don't know. I think maybe in Big Finish it might be better, I've heard. But
it's Big Finish. You can not really do anything except here. I'm sorry, I'll see myself out.
Speaking of audio dramas, I heard...
What did you hear?
Something is coming out.
We've still got
something is coming.
No. Are we teasing Doctor Who Beyond the Shadows? Why are we teasing Doctor Who Beyond the Shadows?
You've still got 20 minutes, mate. Flatline!
Anyway.
I think my brain flatlined.
That's okay. I realised because today is the day that the Doctor Who Beyond the Shadows poster gets revealed, but
yay!
By the time this podcast comes out, that'll be a week and a half ago.
So
you guys can all see it. It'll be on group chats and social media and such. But anyway, so Clara leaves the TARDIS. The Doctor unfortunately gets trapped, and she meets some guy called Rigsy. Rigsy, I don't know. I personally wouldn't do what Rigsy does and go up to a grieving person, start trauma dumping on them, and then go, I'm not a murderer. But, you know...
Well, no, it's the, I'm doing community service, which it obviously implies he's done a crime.
Yeah.
I'm doing crime.
I'm doing crime.
I'm so sorry. This is the second week in a row I've referenced Cain and Abel.
There's
anyway,
many references to Cain and Abel in Who's Up podcast now.
But
the point is, he's
very much made it clear, I did crime, and then goes, I should probably... I'm not a murderer. I didn't do it.
Yeah, but
I
must say, I enjoy the character of Rigsy, but I do very much feel like if this episode was written under RTD's run, Rigsy and all the other community service people would have felt like more fleshed out characters, whereas they were sort of just there.
Fleshed out characters?
Don't do this.
This is the wrong
get out.
Like they didn't have a lot of interest to them, or like
it
roundedness.
It was interesting where the meanest of the lot was the one that survived.
It's very Voyage of the Damned.
Mm.
But like, I feel like in Voyage of the Damned they do a comment of like, if you could decide who lived and who died, that would make you a monster. Whereas in this one it's just like,
who lived, who died.
Oh well, this guy survived.
I think as well there's the whole thing of, yes, Clara, you did do the doctor. You know, you would make a good doctor, but that doesn't mean you're good. For instance, there's a lot of baggage that comes with being the doctor, and for Clara to go, you know, whip out the sonic, I can do it. It's not as easy as that, and particularly with the fact that the Doctor is the one who sort of saves it in the end by going, ha-ha, I am doing a speech now, and then,
But there's also a comment of the kind of goes really over the top with that speech, because you just watch Clara very much do his job almost as well as him.
It's a bit
and
of
like,
pride
in
that.
Some
you've
cases
got to sort of,
better. Like, he was like, I'm going to out-doctor the out-doctorer.
You've got to claw some semblance of pride back.
And so it's like, right. I must unbutton my jacket so that I can appear cool. Like,
I'm the man who stops the monsters.
I do think, as Lou was saying, it's one of the episode's biggest strengths is that it plays with what the idea of what's good and who the Doctor is, which ties in really nicely to Capaldi's arc of, like, is he a good man? And, you know,
am I a good man?
Is it right for Clara to lie to them and tell them they're going to be okay when she can't guarantee that? And I think that's, you know, it's really, really interesting, the whole philosophy about lying.
That whole thing of people with hope run quicker.
It is lying for their own good.
It's part of Clara's arc that they become more like the Doctor and things like that, and that is their downfall.
Yeah, really. Exactly.
But
ironically, with Rigsy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, it's an arc which I've... It works well, but there are just certain lines which I'm just like, whereas people who think they're going to die, and then just like, Clara just goes, dawdle, or something like that. And that, it feels like in that moment, she's trying to be too much like the Doctor, maybe, but I feel like there is still, Clara's still Clara, so they had empathy for the characters who were dying and things like that, but I just feel like it was more the Doctor speaking. Clara's perception of the Doctor that was being represented in Clara throughout this episode.
But I think that's what's interesting about it, though, is it's because usually the Doctor is just doctoring, and it's interesting to see someone else trying to take that role. And the Doctor, it's as the Doctor says, she goes, isn't that how you think? Like, in terms of on balance, it was good. And he goes, yes, broadly, so other people don't have to. And it's, I think it's really, because you do have to think like that if you're trying to save people's lives. It is objectively the right thing to do to lie to them if it means they're more likely to survive.
Yeah.
But it feels very wrong to do that. And I think I think some of the interest with Clara is about how she idolises the Doctor and tries to be like the Doctor. And like in you're completely right in that line, she is echoing the Doctor. But I think that is some of the interest of her character is that she is doing that. I feel like this episode is simultaneously really good and really bad for character, because it's bad in the sense of the characters who are just in this episode. I guess Rigsy technically isn't just in this episode, but I think the one-off characters for this episode are very unfleshed out, and when one of them dies, you don't really care, because they're just someone who was there to die. Whereas I think it's really, really good for the exploration of the Doctor's and Clara's characters, and because it's an exploration of what it means to be the Doctor and what Clara is like.
Man, I love that episode where they cloned Clara.
Well, I couldn't keep calling myself the Clara. Now could I?
I love
someone's former Clara.
Oh dear.
Someone's former Clara minister.
No, that's worse.
A new Clara. At last.
You're not Anthony Ainley. Stop this.
I do think there's something...
I was actually Jeffrey Beavers.
I'd call it a genesis.
So he does say that in St. Antonini as well, though.
Well, yeah, but this is more... Think, new body.
Think of me
as
last.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, I think there's an... I think it's really clever, the resolution of... using your enemy's power against them when... Because the last thing the Doctor says to her is... we need to charge the TARDIS up again. The creatures can pump it out as quickly as they can take it in. And Clara hears that for a moment. I feel like she shouldn't have still been able to hear him because... Mm. And there's also a moment where he can see slightly what she's doing. So they could have communicated by the Doctor talking and Clara like writing something down. So they hadn't cut off communications at all.
Maybe Bestie just needed to check out for a bit.
Yeah, so that was questionable. But in theory...
A bored man.
Also, surely if the Doctor's saying, I don't know if you'll ever hear this, Clara, implying that Clara, as far as he's concerned, might be able to hear it, that means he should be giving the best advice he can rather than going, ah, you are a mighty fine Doctor.
Well, no. In that moment, I feel like he'd be like, you're amazing, goodbye.
Yeah, but... He thinks he's going to die.
Yeah, so he should stop himself from dying. If I thought I was going to die, I'd try to stop myself from dying.
This is the end. Hold your breath and count to ten. You're the best. Bye.
No, but like, you're simply the best. If you were dying, your first thought would be like, make sure you do all the things that, like, no, you'd be like...
My first thought would be, how am I going to not die? How am I going to avoid dying? That's my first thought.
Be dead.
I feel like he went through that bit. He went through that bit a few times. He went through that a bit like, I don't have enough power to turn out. Maybe if I do, no, not enough power, something like that. And then
it's
sort of went through the seven stages of dawdling about.
He thought he was going to die, so he dawdled.
Exactly.
Exactly.
He's proving his own point. Mm. Also, we very much commented on it at the time, but how does sticking your hand through the doors, not even like resting it on anything outside, like putting your hand in the door hole and then like tilting, how does that tilt the TARDIS round?
You're forgetting the Addams Family. Doodle-a-doo.
The way I see it is the interior and the exterior of the TARDIS are effectively separate universes, so you can't really apply conventional laws of force and motion because it's just like
weight. I would imagine that maybe the weight of the TARDIS would then sort of change, and Capaldi would be able to move his hand and then lift it up.
Well, no, because it's like the weird snail crawl thing that he does makes sense because like he's actually physically pulling the TARDIS along.
I mean, if you think about it,
weight thing.
If you're outside the TARDIS and you put your hand in it and rotate it, that will put it the right way up. So if you're inside, obviously, if it was a physical interior, that wouldn't work. But because the dimension is sort of separate, I can sort of see it.
Wibbly wobbly spacey wacy.
And I'm just thinking of that part in Sharda where you got Tom Baker sort of climbing across the whatever. You know, like there were like two separate areas. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think so. The weird effect where it's like you got the two parts.
Yeah. Spoilers for Sharda.
Oh yeah, spoilers for Sharda. Sorry.
Sharda!
I already said spoilers for all of Doctor Who.
Brother, help me! I've never seen Sharda.
But I
don't. Sharda!
Well, what's interesting is that most people, when it was supposed to be made, didn't watch it either, because it was cancelled.
Five Doctors, let's go!
But I must say, I do like, as I was saying, I like the whole thing of using your enemy's power against them. I like that it incorporates Rigsy's skill of graffiti, and having, like, the flattened, like, the supposedly flattened door and the creatures pump it through the wall and
Rigsy
charge
and the
TARDIS.
Man, the only characters that get characterised, and then Rigsy comes back and he just doesn't need to, but still.
Yeah.
Like, those are the only two that get anything.
What happened to the train driver?
He just survived. He was just there. His only characterization was wanting to ram something.
They didn't exactly even have to have the train driver. I was just thinking this, but like, they showed that there were abandoned, like, they were in a sort of abandoned area. And then I guess they weren't, but
there's another train coming, so we use the same effect but with different text.
Thing is,
different number, A113.
Thing is, the train didn't do anything in the first place. There was literally no point of having the train in the episode.
No, yeah.
Other than to give Rigsy a temporary, like, I'm going to sacrifice myself, and then Clara being like, Yeah, but I'm going to use a hairband.
The thing is...
Oh, I really like that hairband. Should I just save someone? But I really like that hairband.
No, listen. We needed to have that moment of hairband. I don't think we're discussing enough how important... That's the most important hairband in human history. It is the most important hairband in human history.
Okay, so let's go back to Rings of Akaten. Lottie is standing there and says, look at this.
Look at this.
Takes out a hairband.
This is the most important hairband in human history. This is the most important hairband in human history.
What would you use?
Come
other than
and
a hairband?
Take it!
The thing is, I think it, if Rixie had
what
been...
about a clip, you know, a hair clip?
I think...
I think if Rixie had been characterised better earlier on in the episode, that moment would have had more weight and it might have felt like some sort of character development. But as it was, it didn't really feel justified that he would so immediately want to be so self-sacrificial and then have a dilemma about, do I die or let the hairband die? Like,
why does he wait?
He wanted to sacrifice himself.
Like,
and I feel like that could have been interesting if he was characterised in a particular way.
May
just
I make
wasn't.
An observation? Could it be because they just wanted to fill out time?
Yes. Yes, that'll be what
it is.
I like Flatline, but it's a bad episode in this particular regard.
I was going to
Bertie's got a thought.
Hello,
the
Bertie.
Fifth member.
Hello, I have a thought on the characterization in this bit
of Rixie.
Of Rixie, and this one in particular. Oh, thank you, Lottie.
No worries.
Something that you come a lot across when you do criminology and when you study criminal justice is people's value of self-worth when they're in the criminal justice system, especially young black males. They are constantly, as you see in the episode, beaten down, broken and dehumanized by older white criminal justice workers. So I don't think it's too out of character for him to want to sacrifice himself, because as you see in the episode, he's constantly being beaten down by the person doing the community service as the criminal justice watcher. You can assume that he's been through the criminal justice system to get onto something like community placements and stuff like that. You need to go through the formal criminal justice system. So it's not a crazy jump. I do think they needed to flesh it out a little bit, but it's not so much of a crazy jump for him to feel almost dehumanized to a point that he feels like his life means nothing. Because you do get him constantly being berated and dehumanized by the justice worker. And that is my criminology cameo. Will Craig, please give me a first.
That is a very good point. I'd not really thought about it in that way. I feel like...
This is canon mail.
I do feel like Rixie himself could have been... Like, his characterization could have been shown more in that respect. But I do think how he is treated, that fits with that in a way. But yeah, I think... I think the train thing... I think a part of it could have been... To be fair, it could have been for that moment and show that message. And if it did, that's a very good idea. It could have been executed better.
If it was the case that they were going to sort of, portray that, Rixie feeling absolutely, worthless and things like that, I wish that they would have sort of maybe had even a moment where Rixie sort of expressed that.
Yeah.
Which would have... I feel like that would have even, that would have added to, the depth of Rixie. And would explain why they're sort of, they don't really fight back against the, I don't know what their name is, but the...
The old dude.
Oh.
The what?
The boneless.
You're talking about the monsters.
Oh, yeah, no.
The old dude.
But if they had a moment,
What is his name?
Of that.
Don't
but
remember.
Instead, they sort of just have, Clara just go... Right, it's you or the hairband, and then Rixie just goes, this is a tough one. This is a tough one. So as we are sort of barreling towards that tunnel of death,
It does feel a little bit like the train, because it feels to me like it was an episode that was redrafted a few times, and that train aspect might have been important in a previous draft and they never quite got rid of it. Also, it would have been better if it had been not just showing something about Riggs's character, but a point of development for him.
Yeah.
I don't know how you'd have done it, but in theory, if it had been a point of character development rather than just something that was showing an aspect of his character, it might have been interesting. Because I don't think Riggsy changed from the beginning to the end of the episode.
Yeah, it's just... I'm always for show, don't tell.
Yeah.
I'm always for it. But that doesn't mean that there can't be... That doesn't mean you can't have an episode without any telling, because that's a bit... That's just sort of... impossible unless you're doing an entire episode of Mime, which if you've watched anything of Inside Number 9, you'll know that there is an episode which is only Mime, which is incredible. That was my Inside Number 9 promotion moment. But yeah, Riggsy's characterization suffers a lot in this episode because there is barely any characterization of Riggsy.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I think... I do think... It does feel like the other characters are pushed to the side for the sake of the Doctor and Clara's characters, which isn't the end of the world, because those are our recurring characters, and it does... Like, they do have interesting character development together in the episode, and I actually love the speech at the end of the episode. I think it's really... I feel... For me... It's almost the first moment where Capaldi really feels Doctor-y. Mm-hmm. Because he, unlike a lot of other Doctors, he doesn't, in his opening episode, have a speech. He has a little moment, but it doesn't feel... It feels like him early in his character arc, where he's not quite figured out who he is yet. Whereas in this, he's, to some extent, figured it out as... I'm the man who stops the monsters. And I love the way he defines what a monster is as being... Ultimately, it's not about like just species or you being an alien or whatever. It's about the fact that they're trying to cause harm, and that's what makes them monsters.
In an episode as, I'll say, discussable as Flatline, Capaldi carries it, and basically any episode, which is every episode that they're in,
Capaldi
carries it.
He's an incredible actor.
I kind of...
Oh? No, I'm not
disagreeing with this. I'm just saying I half checked out the conversation to look up the character name Fenton. Fenton's the old guy.
Fenton!
Is that said in the episode? Because that doesn't ring a bell.
Fenton!
Jesus Christ!
Jesus Christ! Fenton! Fenton! Oh, Christ!
I don't actually know, but it's in the credits as Fenton, so I imagine not.
I think he's a good actor for playing the evil guy.
Well, he's not evil. He's just not very nice.
He's
just a bit dislikable.
Spineless. Perhaps even... Boneless. Doctor, don't you realise everything is boneless?
I must say, I find something quite funny about how...
The boneless banquet!
Oh.
I find something quite funny about how the boneless are...
It's four.
The whole premise is them being two-dimensional creatures, and then the next stage is 3D, and it's like, they're now just like every other Doctor Who monster. In three dimensions.
It's an amazing point that you've made, but I feel like the other people on the other side of the table aren't exactly paying attention to it.
Yeah, what are you doing?
What's happening over that side of the table?
That's three, I mean.
What's happening on that side of the table?
What is this? It looks cool, though.
So I love that we're doing this podcast together. I know it's a bit difficult just having just only two people on a podcast, but...
Me and Louie did it for Who's Views.
Yeah. But I'm sure we can manage.
It's just hit 3 o'clock, which anyone who was...
You're looking at the poster. Okay.
Anyone who remembers 3 o'clock on Wednesday the 31st of January 2024 might know what we're talking about.
I've seen this poster many times before, and I'm... Can I just rub it in? I just want to say I'm mad that the Dalek doesn't have a plunger. I want to make that known.
I've
been campaigning against this since the original conception of the poster. I was like, the Dalek needs a plunger.
What's wrong with claws?
The Dalek needs a plunger.
All right. I'm more into the fact that it's red.
Why are you mad about that?
No, I'm not mad. I'm interested. I'm like, ooh, red. You never really see a red
it's
Dalek.
It's an updated Cushing movie design. Look at it.
Oh, I do
it's got
like,
the fender as
I've
well.
Never
I mean, I...
It's got the fender.
I was there on the discussion Dalek, on the chat.
Movie Daleks! Movie Dalek supremacy!
Basically, cool. There was a whole discussion on the chat about, like, what colour should the Dalek be? We're bored of looking at bronze Daleks. I was all for the bronze Dalek, but everyone else is bored of it.
I've noticed a familiar name on this poster.
Oh, yes?
Oh, yes! Yeah. Joseph Booker! No.
Why?
I'm curious what familiar name you're looking
yours,
at.
Yours, Oliver
Bush. Oh, mine, yes. Yes, I am in fact an actor in this series.
Yay!
Woohoo! Are you okay,
well,
Bertie?
We've got another Bertie cameo of Bameo.
Yeah, because it's an updated movie that I designed from the original movie, which didn't have the fenders.
But yeah,
this has not become, the fenders, the flats. This has become like a discussion of the Beyond the Shadows poster podcast a bit now.
I'm going to head back to my notes for the episode. We're going to have to go to questions in a minute, but I do, yeah. I think the speech is very fun. It's a funky speech. Woohoo, fun times. Does anyone have any closing thoughts on Flatline?
I don't think we've discussed Missy's...
Oh yeah, a little cameo at the end.
Completely forgot about.
I like that there was sort of a hint to what it was going to be before it actually happened, because there was a fade to white for one of the characters who died when that big hand went up.
Oh, I didn't realise what that was.
I would wager that it was a hint of that this person's going to the Nethersphere or something.
I always love Missy's...
That's why it was really elongated and weird.
It's series 8, isn't it?
Yeah.
I always love Missy's sort of... the hints of Missy in series 8, sort of like the little teasers.
One thing that I noticed in this particular one is that you can quite clearly see the 3W symbol in the background, the one that looks especially similar to a certain eye design. But I just think that's interesting. But it's another example of if you go back and watch it again, you notice
it's like the Vote Saxon posters, you know.
Yeah. That sort of thing. They don't become relevant until they are relevant, and then you see them.
But yeah, exactly.
I just adore, like, Michelle Gomez
is incredible.
Yeah. And 20 seconds of screen time on that episode, and it's one of the most memorable ones on Flatline, I think.
I think what makes the Series 8 version of this sort of like, hey, here's a story arc that we're going to subtly hint to. What makes it so powerful is that it's pointed out that, something's weird going on, but, the big reveal of, Dark Water and that sort of thing, of, hey, look, they're Cybermen, isn't pointed out properly until that episode. It's left for you to see.
Yeah.
Like Bad Wolf in Series 1, You can spot it before it's properly pointed out in Boomtown. Mm. In Boomtown, it's literally like the Doctor looks at it, goes, "Oh, that's Bad Wolf in Welsh. That's been following us around. That's a bit suspicious." and then just suddenly like, "Oh, it's nothing." You know it's something because it's specifically pointed to.
Mm.
But like with the 3W insignias in the background, that sort of thing. This whole weird like, "Oh yeah, you've made it to heaven." It's like.
Welcome.
You made it
to
heaven is pointed out, but not the specific, hey look, there's gonna be Cybermen. So it becomes unless you're observant, like my older sister was for some reason, you don't realise until it becomes like, hey, guess what? Stephen Moffat's Cyberman motif.
Cybermen in Stephen Moffat's Doctor Who?
I do not believe this to be possible.
Do you mean the musical motif? Because it's the same one as in RTD2.
Did I say... I meant Murray Gold.
Oh, right, yeah, you said Stephen Moffat.
I'm so sorry, Murray Gold.
It is a beautiful motif.
I love it.
Anyway,
I apologize.
I'm going to move on to questions.
How dare you?
Lottie, presumably before she knew she was going to be on the podcast...
Yeah, it's happened again.
Would you like all the events in your life to be narrated to you via an omnipotent invisible singer? I assume you meant omniscient, as in all-knowing, not all-powerful.
Omnipotent
is all-knowing, isn't it?
No, it's all-powerful.
Because
it has PO, meaning powerful.
Oh, yeah, omniscient, like, yeah. I always get them mixed up.
I remember it because it's omniscient. They can see everything.
Well, I feel like they're all-powerful as well. You know, since they're able to see everything.
What, just knowing everything?
Knowing everything, seeing everything, you know.
No. That makes you very powerful. You can know everything, but have no power to influence anything, and therefore you're definitely not all powerful.
Well, I mean, in terms of, like, they've got enough power to be able to see everything.
Have you
not
got any theology
just...
students in the room?
Anyway, in answer to your question,
answer, please. Question.
No, I don't. I do not want an omnipotent invisible singer. No, an omniscient, preferably not, because I like privacy.
Can I hear them?
Yes.
Because otherwise, what's the point?
If I can't hear them, then yes, I think that'd be quite funny. But if I can hear them, I'm gonna get annoyed because I don't need 50 times being like, "This is your last chance of dying."
Cormac's going to Tesco.
It's your last chance of buying that milk that's going
it
on
depends
sale.
What song it is. If it was a Gilbert and Sullivan opera, I think it would be pretty fun because then I would join it. But if it's like an opera that is like very dark...
Why does it have to be opera?
Why would it be funny?
Yeah, why does it have to be opera?
Because I could join in.
Anyway, Lottie also wants to
it's
know.
Pirates of...
Also, if you were turned into graffiti, what style would you want to be, and where would you like to be placed? I.e., the missing people in Flatline were mostly all in the foot tunnel.
I would like to be a single graffiti tag placed on a train. I can see places.
That's good.
I, for one, do not know anything about styles of
on
graffiti.
On the outside of a train.
Just like a funky, funny little cartoony guy.
What was the question again? It was.
If you were turned into graffiti, what style would you like to be and where would you like to be placed?
Lightning McQueen style.
Life is a highway!
Lottie?
Oh, I'm answering my own question.
Why not?
I never expected to answer the question.
Well, you've been too long. Jacob wants to know. Jacob wants to know, what is the canonical explanation for Capaldi's haircut? Because he's from one team to the next, his hair grows substantially.
Went to Tombstone and got a haircut.
No, actually, what
but
happened?
It got longer.
I do have a canonical
trip.
Reason. You see, the doctor gets more power the more his hair, the longer his hair is. But you see, it also works the other way around.
Mm.
So because he had all this power from announcing, you're the boneless and you're dead now.
It was draining.
Like, no, what happened is that he gained more power from that, and so his hair grew.
Oh, yeah.
See, it's a little bit like, there's a Durham student film that I'm in, which, from one scene to the next, the characters all go inside a cinema, and it's like, you know, they go inside a cinema, and... The scene outside versus inside the cinema were filmed like many weeks or even months apart, and so my hair is much longer inside the cinema than it is outside.
To be fair,
which is much more notable than Capaldi's. It's very funny.
If you look between Time of the Doctor and Deep Breath, Clara manages to like grow out her hair a lot in that short amount of time. Like the Jurassic era must have scarred her. Actually, I think it isn't the Jurassic era, because there's a whole comment of it's like crustaceans.
I don't know
dinosaur
time.
I'm
not a paleontologist.
Lorna wants to know, if you could turn any one character in Gunfighters into the Master for Funsies, which one would it be?
Cool.
I think maybe Doc Holliday, purely for the fact that like you could then do similar, like, haha, it's you, and like you can have the sort of Power of the Doctor plot of like, I'm the Doctor now.
Would the Doctor rock... Wait, is the Doctor or the Master?
The Master.
The Master does rock a beard and a moustache.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe it could be Doc Holliday, but I think as well none of the other characters are memorable in any way. Like, can you imagine? Oh my God, the Master is Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, that would be the most underwhelming
or
reveal
Bill,
ever.
Warren
Earp.
Or Bill Masterton, Masters.
Oh,
but even that doesn't make sense.
I would choose either the omniscient voice.
It's implied to be it's implied to be Kate.
It isn't though. Because
surely
it is. Someone
but
else.
It isn't though.
It's sung by someone else because she actually sings a verse.
Mm.
Hold on.
But it is. But it isn't in terms of like the actual. It's the voiceover. So when they're just walking through town, and they're not hearing anything, but then we're hearing the voice. That's the master.
Let me get the TARDIS wiki page.
Well, either that, or I'd want it to be
the
TARDIS.
Ballad. The Ballad of the
Smoke
Last
and Joe by Tom Hardy.
as performed by, where was it? Where? Come on.
With rings on their fingers and bells on their toes, the girls come to do so in their high silk clothes. They'll dance on the table and give you a tune.
That's very good.
You went off key on.
Oh, I'm so sorry that I don't know the song very well.
No, you did it wrong.
Oh, gosh.
What was I gonna... Who's...
Yes. Sorry.
Only one consolation is the last chance saloon. Cockerack, it's your last chance of looking up. It's your last chance of...
Ollie's just like crying because they're going to have to edit all these sweats.
There's no one to laugh.
Wait, was Peter
the last swear? Chance of losing. Last place you'll find. Originally written in the thing. Anyway, yeah, it was sung by Linda Barron.
Yeah, who is Mrs.
Not Kate Fisher, I don't think.
Auntie Mabel.
Yes, sure. Anyway.
It was what?
I think maybe Kate Fisher.
Look up, look down.
Well.
Person.
I don't know. I think it is saying.
Come outside.
Kate Fisher did some meddling. I could maybe see the master there.
Hmm.
I don't know, my mind's been...
Because she's usually like, oh yeah, you take this gun, and then immediately goes and saves him. And somehow manages to beat the doctor there. I don't know how that happened. How slow is the doctor walking?
Have you seen him?
He went to the dairy store, you know why, to get some lovely unpasteurised milk.
I'm just imagining the doctor singing this, like,
hang on. One consolation is last chance saloon, Stephen.
So fill up your glasses and join in the song. The law's right behind you and it won't take long. So come, you coyotes, and howl at the moon till there's blood upon the sawdust in the last chance saloon.
What's happening?
Anyway, Jacob...
I just learned that Auntie Mabel was in the Gunfighters and no one told me.
Harry was telling us yesterday.
I was trying to pay attention. I was paying attention to the episode. I didn't.
I was trying to ignore Harry. Honestly.
Anyway, Jacob wants to know. Also, which companion actor would make the best Doctor? Eccleston once said Billy Piper because, of course, he did. Because Eccleston loves Billy Piper, which is fair enough. Yeah. Which companion actor would make the best Doctor?
Romana.
I mean, see, yeah. I think Jenna Coleman would make an excellent Doctor, not as Clara.
I would think Romana would be...
Either of the Romanas,
yeah,
I think.
Romana would make a good classic Doctor.
True.
She overacts a lot, but, like, it really, really works.
How many Nymons?
I love Romana, Nymons? Don't get me wrong. I love her so much, and it would really work for a classic Doctor. She doesn't quite have the realism of the modern Doctors.
Other companions that... I'll tell you who would make the worst Doctor.
Oh, no.
Adric.
Oh, God.
I think I figured out who would make the best one. Elizabeth Sladen.
Oh, yes.
Could say Elizabeth Sladen.
Yeah,
that's better.
Lorna wants to know...
I made that joke.
Also, which song do you think would make a good Doctor Who episode if played constantly to describe the plot?
Spice Up Your Life.
It's the end of the world, as we know it.
That would do it.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
Verses that could recur, like the ballad of the Last Chance Saloon.
Yeah.
What's a good song?
It's tricky.
Nah, just have Bohemian Rhapsody. Think it'd be funny.
Fair.
Do an episode based around Bohemian Rhapsody.
Louis, any ideas?
Call it a night at the opera or something.
Yellow Submarine.
I'm trying to think of the song.
Chesterton, we all live in a yellow submarine, don't you know?
We'll move on to the next question, and you can come back if you think of something.
Yes. Back on Gallifrey.
Freya wants to know, why is The Gunfighters the worst Doctor Who episode ever made? I think that's a bit harsh. The first part was funny.
It's not the worst Doctor Who episode ever
made.
It's not
the worst one.
We've watched worse.
As I say,
year.
I like the sets and the actual design, I think, is actually quite good. So to say it was made bad... I mean, compare it to War is the Deep, where you got, you know, the creature was made half an hour before, smelled of adhesives and all that.
I feel
it's,
like...
It's not, but it might be up there.
Whilst I did have to separate Bertie and Ollie from booping each other's noses, like, because they got quite bored, it was like a... It was like a guardian having to watch their kids in the back of a car.
And I think as much as we laugh about it, the song did give us some talking points.
Yeah, it did.
Because it was brilliant. We'd be like, right, that's the last one now.
It's going to be the last one.
Lorna wants to know which other doctor would have similar backseat driver vibes to 12 in this situation and which ones would be patient. Six would backseat drive like crazy.
Mm.
Nine, possibly, but nine could do either. I can see nine being like, okay, just do
it. I could see three going from calm to backseat driver very quickly.
One would definitely backseat driver.
Depending on who it was that was which doing it, I can see Tom. Four doing either.
Yeah.
Weirdly.
Which one were you saying four would be?
I was being like with in the TARDIS.
But backseat driving or being patient?
Oh, backseat driving.
I'm
trying to think of any properly like doctors that would be patient. 13. I think 13 would be patient.
I feel you know who I think would be patient? 14. No.
I think two would Maybe. Be patient. Two's chill.
15.
Yeah, 15 would be patient.
Is, I could see two being patient, but he would have a go at them afterwards.
Maybe.
Well,
yeah.
Jamie, never do that again.
Anyway.
My Charlton is very
bad. I'd forgotten that you were talking about Charlton for like half a second. I thought you were doing like a 14 impression. I was thinking, it's not amazing.
Oh dear.
Ah yes, David Troughton. Anyway,
David Troughton.
Thing is, there is a person called David Troughton. He played the professor in Midnight and
yeah. He is related to Patrick Troughton.
The Paladin story. It's his son.
Yeah. Oh no. Oh no.
Anyway, that's all the questions. Does anyone have any closing thoughts?
Why do we end with a monologue?
Get the kazoo.
Oh, Christ. Sorry.
What did I think of these stories? Well, I thought the first one was bad, and the other one was better. Those are my closing thoughts.
Nice. That's goodbye from me, Ollie, Lottie.
Good night.
Cormac.
That's goodbye from me.
And Louis.
I thought you were going to do a big old monologue.
I don't want to go.
Da, 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 da. Okay. Anyway.
And hello from Bertie.
Next week. Oh, hello, Bertie.
Goodbye.
next week, we're going to be watching The Rebel Flesh, The Almost People, and A Good Man Goes to War in Flesh Week, which is my week.
Your week?
Yes, my week. I chose the episodes for this week. Next week.
Purple Radio Podcasts. Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.